Hello, everybody. Welcome to iOS Section 4, our last section of the course. Today, we'll be taking a look at core graphics and core animation. So just a reminder, everything is online, including the notes and slides. If you haven't received your feedback for the Android Student's Choice or for your iOS proposal, do let us know via help.cs76.net, and we'll make sure to get those to you as soon as possible. So today we're going to be taking a look at more in-depth core graphics drawing and drawing shapes and gradients and shadows, and particularly working with images and the different ways we can display images and apply effects to images. Then we'll take a look at core animation, much like we saw Android animation and moving UI views around the screen, and finally integrating with other apps that are on the user's device. So while OpenGL does exist for the iPhone, we'll be taking a look at Quartz today. So this does work with OpenGL and UIKit and all those elements. But the basic idea of Quartz is that you'll have layers painted to some canvas. And so the drawing model for this is called the painter's model. So once you draw something, if you again draw something that overlaps that or on top of it, that second object is going to be what's painted. So everything is drawn onto the screen in the order they appear, and so things drawn later will overlap things that were drawn previously. So the first thing we need to do before we can do anything interesting is get what we want to draw to. And so this is going to be called a context. Most of the methods and properties we look at today are going to start with CG, and that's for core graphics. So this is going to be a C struct, as most of our data types are going to be when we're working with core graphics. And if we just want to draw out to the screen, we can just call this UI graphics get current context. That's going to say everything that I draw to on this context is going to be output to the screen, which is typically what we want to do. But you can also write to PDFs or even bitmaps by simply using a different context. Now, where we're going to do our drawing is this draw rect method. And so this is a method of any UI view. So any subclass of UI view also has this method, which we'll see. And this is going to be called to display contents only as much as it needs to be. So this isn't going to be called something like 60 times a second, but only as much as it needs to be. If you'd like to force a redraw, you can just say set needs display, and the whole thing will be redrawn. But iOS is going to be smart about this and only redraw exactly what needs to be redrawn rather than redrawing everything. So the first thing we'll take a look at are paths. So a path is going to be a collection of points that are connected. We can use paths to define shapes, or as we'll see later, paths. Animation paths. That makes more sense. So first, we have a point. So we saw this today. It's going to be a CG point. And the way that we move our context to a point to say start drawing at this point is with the CG path move to point. So this is going to operate on a single context. When we call this method on a context, that means our current point that we're operating on is going to be the CG point we specify here. So if we want to create a line, so we're going to start at some point with the CG move to point, and then we're going to say we're going to add some point to a line. And so the CG path add line to point is going to take another point, and it's going to connect any existing points in the context with the line. So if we don't want to do a line, we can also do curves. So we can say we can add a curve to point, or we can add a quad curve to point. And so these are just different methods that define how a curve is formed. So the first of these are going to be more cubic, so it'll be one peak and one valley, where the latter is going to be quadratic, so it'll just be either a peak or a valley. And so these will take control points that are going to decide how that curve is how that peak or valley is formed. So we won't get into the math there. But basically know that these are going to take a lot of arguments because we're having a start point, an end point, and then either two or three control points. And that's going to determine the height of your peaks and valleys. So once we've added our curves or arcs or our lines to our path, we need to close it. So to do that, it's really simple. We're just going to close a subpath on this path ref we created. Now, once we have our path, we need to actually add it to the context. So to do that, we have our context add path. And so now, once our path is on the context, we haven't actually drawn anything yet. We've simply specified some area in which we can do something. So if we want to fill that area, it's creating a shape, we're going to say fill path. And so that will fill in the path with some color you specified. Or if we just want to trace an outline, we can stroke. And so that will just trace a line along the points that you specified. So we can customize how this is drawn. We can set the line width if we're stroking. We can set the line cap, so how these lines end. They could be jagged or curved or flat. And then we can set a dashed line, as we saw in lecture. So instead of just drawing a straight line, we can draw a dashed line instead of adding a million points that aren't connected. And finally, we can set both the stroke and the fill color with this set color with color. And so these are both going to take UI colors which are not core graphics colors, so we need to convert them. Luckily, we have a nice property to do that, that is just CG color. So if you use that property of any UI color, you're going to convert that to a core graphics color that we can draw. So let's take a look at working with a simple path. Hopefully. Okay. So you'll notice here in my my main view controller, I actually don't have anything. I'm not doing anything with core graphics in this view controller. And that's because this is a view controller, not a view. So what I've done is I've created a new UI view via the right-clicking and just clicking Add File, and I call it Paths View. And so you'll notice that I'm not subclassing a generic NS object anymore, but I'm subclassing this UI view. So what this means is that I can start using this drawRect method. And as you can see, this is where all of our core graphics stuff is going to go. But just because I've created a new view, that doesn't mean that it's actually attached to that screen yet. So to do that, I can go up into my view controller nib, and you'll notice here that I have this view property. So usually we haven't really touched that, but now because I want to be drawing on this paths view, not this blank view I have here, I can just set the class of that over here in the attributes inspector to be paths view, where typically this just says UI view. I've changed it to be paths view, and Xcode recognizes that this is a valid UI view, and it'll be populated inside of this dropdown. So now, instead of just drawing this blank view, we're going to be drawing this view I have here. And so we're just creating a couple shapes from paths. So the first thing we're doing is we're getting our context, and then we're going to create two paths. So the first one is called line path. So you can see here, I've moved to some point, this in the top left corner of the screen, and I'm just going to draw a line across the screen, so I'm in the top right corner now. For my rectangle, I'm going to do the same exact thing. I'm just added 4 points that will form a rectangle. In both cases, I'm calling this closed subpath, so we know that the path ends, and these are two separate paths and not one path. And then finally, after I do things like customize the line width and the color, I can add the path to my context, which is just the screen, and then finally, I can either stroke or fill the path. So the result of all this code is just a bit underwhelming. But here we have our two shapes that were drawn by our paths view. So any question how we got from that blank view to those two shapes on the screen? Yep?
When you close a path, does that just mean that it connects the last point to the first point, or?
So what happens when you close a path? That just means that if I were to call something like move to point or add line to point, it's not going to add it to that same path. So I can't actually draw a path until I close it. So once I close this path, that means I'm not going to add any more lines to it.
So it doesn't change anything?
No, so it doesn't actually change anything. It just says, okay, this path is done, and right, we're ready to go.
I had an image of you were going around like this, and it would do the last thing for you. That's not it.
Oh, no, it won't. That's right. So it'll just stop. It'll stop the path there, and then you're going to draw it. So any other questions? Okay, so let's take a look at some other things we can do with core graphics. So we have built-in support for shadows, which is really nice. And just like in CSS3, we're going to need three things. An X offset, so an offset from the center of the thing you're shadowing, the Y offset, and then the blur. So there are two methods to create shadows, really simple. Just set shadow, or if you don't want to be the default black color, you can give the shadow a specific color. Now, one other thing that you might run into when you're working with core graphics is having to reset everything. So, you know, if you turn on a shadow and set the fill color and the stroke color, and then you want to draw something else, you have to set all of that back. Because once you set the fill color on a context, everything that's drawn in that context afterwards is going to use that last fill or stroke color that you set. So setting everything back and forth can be pretty annoying. And so to alleviate this, core graphics maintains a stack of all the states you've created. So if we say save gstate, save the graphic state, we're going to push the current state of the context onto this built-in stack that we don't even have to worry about. So if later we want to restore all of those values, once we've changed anything, we can just say restore state. And on the current context, that's going to put all of the values that are present in the state when we saved it back into the context. So let's take a look at how that works. Pretty simple. So once again, I've just created my own view here that is still a subclass of UI view. And so I'm just going to create a couple paths. This time we're drawing triangles. And here we're just calling set shadow. So you'll notice that I'm calling set shadow before I draw anything. So everything I draw after I call this set shadow is going to be shadowed. So now I can add the path to the context, set the fill color, and then I can fill it. So this is going to fill in a triangle with my color, and it's automatically going to be shadowed for me. So now I'm creating a second path here, but before I do anything, I'm going to restore the state that I saved. So right here we have restore gstate, and that's going to pop the state that I just saved. So I saved the state before I added that shadow, so if I restore it, the shadow is going to be gone. So when I run this app, I'm going to have two triangles, one of which is going to have a shadow because I created it, and the other of which does not, because I've restored the state, which means the shadow is no longer there. So any questions on shadows or state? Yep?
So the shadow is an attribute of the context and applies to everything you do from then on.
Yes.
Unlike, say, color. Well, no, color also.
Right, so every
They're not properties of the objects that you're drawing.
Yes, so it's a little different than what we've been working with. These things aren't properties of the objects we're drawing. They're properties that are set on the current context. So as soon as you say set fill color or set stroke color, everything you do after that call will have those properties in that same context. So same thing with shadow. Because we said set the shadow before we drew it, everything we draw after that is going to be shadowed. In this case, I didn't draw anything after that. But so it's a little different than perhaps we've been used to working with because they're not properties of the path themselves. They're properties of this context. And it's a little harder to see when you're not actually accessing properties of a struct, but you're just calling these set fill color on a context. Okay, so that is state. So now, just like we have shadows in CSS3, we also have support for gradients. And so we're going to be using this gradient ref struct. And we can draw two types of gradients. The first is axial, so a linear gradient, and the colors will be faded along some line. Or we can do a radial gradient. So these colors will kind of emanate out from the center of a circle to some given radius. So to draw a gradient, we're going to need three things. We're going to need some color space, which is something new that we'll introduce, the colors that you want to fade between, and then the locations for each color in the gradient. So first, these color spaces. We have three built into iOS for us. We can use RGB, or we can, if we want to, we can use CMYK, which you might see more commonly in print media. Or finally, we just have a plain grayscale. So these are the longly named methods for accessing those. So let's see what we can do with gradients. Not that one. So inside of my gradient, I've set up first these locations. And so these are going to be floats between 0 and 1 that are the locations of each color. So if this were, say, 0.025, that's going to be 25% through the image. So because I'm just using two colors in my gradient, the first color is going to start at position 0, so the beginning of the gradient, and the second color is going to start end at position 1. So basically what the 0, 1 says is I'm going to create a gradient all the way through, with my two colors, the first being the first color and the second being the other color. So this components here is a somewhat annoying way of having to do everything, but every four elements basically defines one color. So these first four elements define the color red. So this fourth value is alpha, or transparency. So setting it to one means it's not going to be transparent at all. So we have all red, no green, no blue. While this second color has no red, all green, and no blue. So this basically is creating a gradient that's going to fade from red to green. So once we have our components and our locations set up, we can call this create with color components. We're just going to say it's in the RGB color space, or else we'd have to specify different values up here. We're going to use our locations, so 0 and 1, just fading through the whole thing. And finally, this last argument is the count, so how many colors are actually being used, because these are C arrays which don't have a built-in way of getting their length. So we need to say specifically that we're using two colors here. So then we can draw two different types of gradients. First is going to be linear, so it's going to go from the point 0, 0 to the point 100, 100. And in both cases, I'm using the same gradient. And then this radial is going to go from a circle of 150 at point 150, 150 with a radius of 10 to a circle from 250, 250 with a radius of 80. So what these look like is this. So we have our two radians here. So I'm going from the point 0, 0 to the point 100, 100. And then I'm having a radial gradient between two circles with different radii. So any questions on how any of that worked? Okay, so now all that is interesting, and that's really fun to draw stuff. But where Core Graphics really comes in handy is when you want to create your own UI views. So until now, we've basically just been using stock buttons and stock table cells without really giving any effort to customize them ourselves. And so there are two ways we can do that. A lot of these properties have underlying view properties or background view properties that you can simply modify to swap out the UI view that's drawn. Or we can actually subclass something like a UI button to create our own custom button. So let's take a look at both ways of doing this. So here, now you'll notice by the files over the left that I've created a familiar navigation-based application. So I have my root view controller, but more importantly, I have this custom cell object. And so you'll notice that this is simply a UI view. It's not a UI table view. And inside of my draw rect, I'm just going to do something really, really simple. So I'm going to get the context to draw on, so it's still the screen. And now I'm going to create a color. In this case, it's just going to be red. I could have just said UI color red color here, but this is how you could create your own color, so not just the stock built-in colors. And again, notice that I'm using this Core Graphics color property. I can't just pass UI color to any of my Core Graphics functions. And so now I'm setting the fill color, and I'm filling the rectangle that is defined by this bounds. And so this bounds is going to be set by the table view when it's creating all of these cells. So we say we want to fill the whole thing with this red color. So now to actually use this cell, usual table view stuff here, but now, after I create my cell, I'm going to switch this background view. So this is the view that's going to be displayed to use, that'll be used to display the background of the cell, and instead I'm using a new instance of my custom cell. I'm just initing auto-releasing. And now just some other few things to make sure we do. We want to make sure that the default color doesn't draw on top of our cell. So by default, that has a color white. We just want to make sure that that doesn't accidentally hide some of our cell or anything. So we're just saying the background color is going to be clear, so totally transparent. And now we're just disabling the selection of cells just to make things a little nicer. So if we fire this up, we have our red table cells. So inside of here, I could have gradients, I could draw shapes, I could really do whatever I wanted because I've created my own UI view that I'm drawing myself with that draw rect method. So now, what if instead of using that background view property, we want to just create our own custom UI view? So to do that, I've created a new class called custom button. And you notice here that I'm now subclassing the UI button. So now I have all of the properties and methods that are available to a UI button available to me, including still, because UI button is a subclass of UI view, this draw rect. So inside of this button, instead of just creating a color, I'm going to create a gradient. So here's the same gradient we looked at before. And again, we're going to draw this linear gradient based on this bounds property. So the bounds property will be set by the user when they create the button with some given size. So I'm going to draw starting from the x and the y, and I'm going to draw with the size of width and height. And this extra zero here just says I don't want to do anything else fancy with my gradient. There are some other options I can add. I don't really want them. And so now, when I actually add this button to my view, I'm not going to do so with Interface Builder because I don't have that little object I can drag in. Instead, we're going to have to create this programmatically. So not too bad, because we're first just going to alloc a new instance of our button, and we're calling this initWithFrame. So this is defined by UIButton, not by us, and we're just specifying that CG rect we saw in lecture. So we're going to start at position 50, 50, and it's going to be 100 by 50. So we're giving our button a title and a color. So again, not something I did that was defined by UI button for me, but the title is going to be the text displayed in the button, and this color is going to be the font color of the button. So I can interact with this button just like I could any rounded rect button, but we need to attach these event handlers programmatically. So first, I'm going to use this addTarget method. And the first argument is going to be where this, this method is defined. So it's going to be defined in self. The action is going to be what method is going to be fired inside of this object. So in this case, I've created a method called pressed. And this for control events says, when do you want to fire this callback? In this case, I want to use that touchup inside, which is the default action when a user presses a button. So when their finger lifts off of it, that's when we want to fire the method. So inside of this press method, which I've created, we're just going to send a simple UI alert view to the user, letting them know that they pressed the button. So we can look at how awesome this button is. You'll probably want to use it in all of your students' choice projects because it looks so cool. Yeah, so there's our gradient. We're going from red to green again. And you'll notice that it's sideways because of how we specified the points on our linear gradient. The text is blue, and if I tap it, it's going to interact just like any other UI button because I have all of that functionality for free by subclassing it. So any questions on creating these UI views that have different styles than what we've seen in the stock stuff? Yeah?
Is there any way you
So is there any way we can do it in UI Builder? I probably is, although I did do it programmatically just as an exercise of how to do it. But if we do change the class, let's see. So let's create a new button. Call it button. Go over here to the attributes, and if we change its class, it looks like this should work. And indeed, it does. So just like that. Right, so the thing is we're not going to see the way it's drawn in Interface Builder. We're still going to see the stock rounded rect button, but if we just do change that class attribute, we're going to achieve the same effect. But in case you wanted to create something like dynamic GUIs or have really more control over what's going on with your buttons, this would be how to do it programmatically. So not too bad. It sounds intimidating, but it's really not that bad. Other questions on creating custom UI views? All right, so let's move away from graphics a little bit and talk about these somewhat related dealing with images. So no longer are we going to draw our own stuff, but we can work with images that are supplied either by the user or inside of the project. So the easiest way to do things is to, like we did in lecture, create this UI image view. And so this UI image view has this image property that we can get either from the web or from our own project via this image with data. And so that'll do things like handle scaling and aspect ratios just by that different property you can set over an interface builder. Now, what we haven't seen yet is how to actually get images from, say, the user's device, whether it be on their camera or from the camera roll. So to do that, we have this built-in view controller called the UI Image Picker Controller. And so this is really, really easy to use, but we're going to use it, create it, just by typical alloc init, and then we can show it to the user with this present modal view controller. So the one important property is going to be the source type, so where to get the images from, so either from the user's photo albums or to present a camera and have the user take an image. So if we want to use the delegate, we have to make sure we're using the delegate property. We're setting the delegate property to be whatever view controller implements these methods. Really easy to forget and save yourself hours of debugging. But the two events we're concerned about is this did finish picking media with info. And this is going to be when the user selected an image. Now, this image picker controller actually has the built-in functionality of allowing the user to either scale or crop their image. So we can get either the original image, so before the user did anything to it with moving it around or scaling it, or we can get that edited image, so the result of the user playing around with it. Also, we have this did cancel. In case you need to tell a user that they really need to pick an image or something. And so this is surprisingly simple to use. So let's take a look at it. So here first, I've created a UI image view and this button that just says pick image. So when I click this button, this method pressed is going to fire. And here we just see we're presenting this modal view controller, this self.picker. So what is that? So I created that up in viewDidLoad. So I'm just creating a new instance of my picker controller. I'm going to say I want the source to be the photo library on the device because the simulator doesn't have a camera. And now we have this allows editing. So when the user selects an image, this is going to say, do you want to move it or scale it or anything like that? And finally, I'm remembering to set the delegate so I can access these callback methods accordingly. So what happens when the user selects an image, I'm defining this did finish picking media with info, and this info argument is where we're going to get all of the information regarding the picture the user selected. Whoa. So all I'm doing is I'm going to display in my image view the edited image, so the result of moving it around or scaling it, and then I'm going to make sure that I get rid of that image picker controller. So if we fire this up, so I click on this pick image button. Oh, no photos. Oh, I deleted it. All right, if we pretend that this is not going to happen, and I just download a photo from, say, xkcd.com, and I get one that's not too big. So if I want to save this photo from the browser, in case you're wondering, I can just hold long click on it, and then click on Save Image, and that's going to save it to my photo library. Now if I go back into my app, which is App 5, and I click Pick Image. Okay, so there we go. Not sure what that was, but I've now saved the image to my camera roll twice. Okay. So we'll chalk that one up to a strange simulator bug. And if we go back into the app, and we click on Pick Image, there we go. Okay, so now we have an image on our device. Our photo album is not blank, so let's go into the Save Photos, and we can select an image. So now I have this nice dialogue where I can move this image around and scale it. So let's just make it huge. So let's scale it up and click Choose. And so now I've loaded that image into my image view. So now if I instead want to get the image before the user edited it, I'm not going to, lest the simulator fail again, I would just change this edited image to be original image. So any questions with that image picker or how to use the images that the user selected from it? All right, cool. So that's all pretty straightforward. So now what if instead of just using this image view, but I really want to control how the image is displayed, so I can draw it in some shape or scale it or draw things on top of it perhaps. So if we have this UI image, we can actually convert it, as we saw, to a CG image really, really easily, and then use this draw in rect method. So this is going to take some CG rect or a core graphics rectangle, and it's going to draw a core graphics image inside of it. Or we can use the more explicit CG context draw image, so it looks just like our other core graphics function, and it's going to draw some given CG image and some given rect. An interesting thing to note with this is that the coordinate system for this function is actually upside down. So when you draw an image that's right side up, it'll likely be flipped. So in the example, I've actually flipped my image upside down and then drawn it with the CG draw image. If you don't want to do that, you can use transforms. So these allow you to rotate, scale, or translate your image. The first two are more useful. So if you can actually, using these transformation matrices, you can actually flip the coordinates, so the coordinates are in the top left, and so then that will draw the image not upside down. So what's really cool about using this CG image ref instead of an image view is you can draw it in some arbitrary polygon. So draw in rect is going to take, obviously, a rectangle, but we can use paths to specify what's called a clipping. And so what a clipping says is that once we specify a path and we call CG context clip, anything that is drawn that does not fall in this region is not going to be drawn. And so only things that are inside of this path are going to actually be displayed to the user. So let's take a look at what that does. So if we open up this one. So here, I've loaded in two images. Now you notice this one is upside down. This one is not. Again, on my own UI view here. First thing I'm doing is just loading these UI images into memory with this UI image name. And so this, just like path for resource, is going to look for an image with that file name. So the first thing I'm doing is just drawing in rect. And so at this point, this rect is going to represent the entire screen because I've just set that view property to be this UI view. So this will draw the image that will fill the whole screen, much like we saw last week. So because I'm using CG images now, I can arbitrarily draw things. So if I just create a square, pretty standard, give it a fill color, I can actually draw the square on top of the image. Now with this second image, I don't want to display it in a rectangle. I want to display it in kind of this triangle thing. So here's just a path that I've defined, and now I'm going to call this context clip after I've added the path, and this says that anything that does not fall in the last path that I added to the context won't be drawn. So when I call this draw image, it's not just going to draw inside of a rectangle, even though the second argument seems to say that it would. So here we go. This first image is filling the entire screen, where the second image, you'll notice, is no longer a rectangle. But it's kind of a diamond shape because I've defined some triangle and then called clip. So this bottom left half of the image is going to fall outside of that triangle, and the top little bit of the top corner is going to be outside of that triangle. So it's not going to be drawn. Let me just get rid of this larger image so you can better see the shape since the colors are a little similar. So you notice if I don't draw that original one, that larger image, then that's the shape we get. So no longer just a rectangle, but I'm manipulating my UI image. So any questions on UI images or paths or how to combine them? Okay, so that's it for static graphics. Let's move into the, I think, more interesting core animation. So a core animation allows you to do is rotate these 2D layers, so UI views or what have you, inside of a three-dimensional space, which actually creates some really cool effects. So there are two types of animations. The first are implicit, and so these are really easy to use. All you do is change the properties of some UI view, say animate, and they're going to animate for you. You really don't do much. Or if you want to have more control over your animations, you can create explicit animations. So let's look at the former first, but before we do so, it's important to make sure that just like we imported all those libraries last week, we do the same. We're going to be looking at quartzcore.framework, and all the CA animation stuff is defined there. So before you do anything with animation, you want to make sure that these are inside your project. So implicit animation, they're going to be contained within the static methods to UI views. So somewhat strangely, we're actually going to say UI view begin animations. And again, we're just going to specify this context. We don't really have to specify anything. And so inside of this block, if we change the properties of any UI view, like its opacity or its position, it's going to animate for us, which is pretty cool. So if we want to kind of customize what these animations do, we can change the transition. So there are a lot of stock transitions built in, like the page curl or fading. We can set the duration. This is going to be a float in seconds. And then finally, we can register callbacks like we did in Android. So once the animation finishes, we can do something if we use the set animation delegate and then implement the did stop selector. So let's take a look at what animations do, and we'll finally get some somewhat cool looking apps. Not that one. Okay. So first, I'm just going to have two buttons. One is going to say I move up and down, and one's going to say I fade in and out. And that is exactly what they will do. So they're both tied to this button press method. Just like we saw before, rather than implementing two methods, I'm assigning each button this numeric tag. And so the first button has a tag of 0, and the second button has a tag of 1. So before I do anything, I'm going to say begin animations. I'm just going to say this block is called button or whatever, and we don't need to worry about this second context argument. So here, all I'm doing is I'm moving the center of my button. And so if I move the button down, when I press it again, I want it to animate back up. So I'm keeping track of how many times the user has pressed the button. If that's an odd number, then I want to move down. If it's an even number, then I want to move up. So nothing that looks relatively difficult there. We're just changing a simple property. Done here, we're customizing it a little bit. We're saying we want the transition to be curl up. We want to apply that transition to our second button. Now we're going to say it's 1 second, and then we're going to make sure we set the delegate to self, and the std stop selector is the method that'll be fired when it's done, in which case we're, as usual, just going to display an alert to the user. So once I call commit animations, then these things are going to start. So let's take a look at what these do. So the first, I click it, we're just going to change the center property, and so it's going to animate downwards for us. I can change the speed of that by simply changing the duration, but I click again, I animate it up. If I click this, I get this kind of cool page curl effect, and I get this callback saying I'm done, and I click it again, and that effect is built in for me, pretty cool looking, and I didn't really do anything. All I'm doing is changing the opacity, and I set that transition that defined how the opacity is actually changed. So any questions on implicit animations there? All right. So now let's take a look at explicit animations, so really using this core animation framework. So what are actually going to be animated are these CA layers. So a UI view actually has this underlying layer, and that's what we're going to be animating, not the UI view itself. So if we're not working with UI views, we'd have to provide some content to our layer with the content property. So we could set it to an image or what have you, but we're just going to be looking at UI views, which already have their content set, and we can just get at this layer by using the layer property. So the CI keyframe animation is what's going to define a custom animation, so we can move things around in the same animation or animate multiple properties at once. So the list of animatable properties, you can check out at that URL there, because it's not immediately obvious, this argument called keyPath. And this is going to be a string rather than a property itself. And so you're going to tell our keyframe animation what is going to be animated via this string. And so this list is a pretty helpful guide. So let's say we want to move something along a path. Again, this mutable path ref is going to come in handy because we can simply set our path property of our animation to be the path we created. And again, we have duration. And the key path we want to use is going to be position, all lowercase. Yep?
What do you mean by path layer as opposed to path?
Oh, so the path. So this basically, either be a typo, but that basically, I meant to distinguish the path that is going to be used for the animation via okay. Not just the path property of the object. So this just says that this mutable path ref we're going to pass to this path property. Perhaps not the best English. So alternatively, if we don't want to move something around, we can apply transformation matrices again. So again, we can use 3D space here. So we can rotate, scale, or translate. And we can specify an array of these. So first, one will be applied, and then another one will be applied if we use this NSArray values of our animation. So a little vague, but let's take a look at what that actually means. So first, again, we just have these two buttons. I move around, I spin and grow. So when the first button is pressed, we're going to create a path. So these are just some somewhat random points on the screen. Now I'm going to create my keyframe animation. And you notice that I'm using this key path. So this is going to say I want to animate position. If I don't say position here, then the animation will just get confused. So then from my animation, I'm going to set the path and duration that I want it to animate along. And then I'm going to call this addAnimation. So this is going to start the animation, and this for key parameter just matches this key path again. So that's the first. The second, I'm going to apply a series of transformations. So first, this rotation is actually not going to do anything. It's just going to say start at this position instead of jumping to the next position. Then this is going to flip it on its side. And then finally, we're going to scale it up, so it'll be twice its size. So now when I create my animation, I want to use the keyPath transform because I'm applying transformation matrices. And again, this is all described in that link that I put up. And now we have our values. And so this is going to be an array of our values that are going to represent the transformations. So notice that these are just generic values that are the result of this, these transformation matrices. And so finally, I'm going to add the animation, same thing with the key path here. And you also notice I've specified auto reverses. And so the issue we had in Android was we'd animate it, and then it would just snap back to its original position. If instead we wanted to animate back to the way it was, we can just use this auto reverses property, and it will do so. So if I click this first button, you'll notice that this button is tracing along a path. We can change the speed again by changing the duration. And this guy, we're going to spin, we're going to grow, and then we're going to auto-reverse back to our original position. So that was the result of these three transformation matrices. So any questions on how I did that? All right. So to finish things off, let's just take a quick look at how we can integrate our application with other apps on the user's device. So like in Android, we're going to open up other applications via URLs. So if we supply a URL starting with HTTP, iOS is going to say, okay, you obviously want to open up Safari, so I'm going to pop that open for you. We also have the familiar tell in SMS if you want to open up the dialer or the text messaging app. So to do that, we're going to use this UI application shared application. This just says something that I'm going to pass any URL to, and the system is going to know what to do with it. Now, if we want our app to be opened by other apps, you'll remember that last time we modified this Android manifest.xml. This time we have something really similar in that info.plist file. So we have to specify a URL that is going to be used by our app. So in this case, we'll just specify a protocol, and anything starting with that protocol will be opened by our app. And then when the app is actually opened, we have this method inside of the app delegate that's going to be fired. So that way we can distinguish when the user just opened the app or something else, so some other app opened it. So as our final example, so here's my view. I just have a label that other apps are going to change the value of, and this other button that just says Open Safari. So this is a really, really simple way of just opening Safari. We're going to say we're going to send some URL. It's going to start with HTTP, so the iOS is going to know what to do with it, and we're just going to send it along to the shared application, and this will open up Safari for us. So now when we receive when we are opened by another app, that behavior is going to be defined in the app delegate. So remember that this file is where we handle things like our app being backgrounded or being started for the first time. So here we have our handle open URL, and we're just going to get the first parameter of this URL and just set that to be the text of our label. So this really long method just says you want to replace something like a space, which will be encoded as %20, with an actual space. And this first line says we want to ignore the first part of our URL, because the URL we're using is this cs76.//. So anything that supplies this URL is going to be opened by our app. So how do we tell the system that our app should respond to that URL? So we're going to look at this plist. So again, as David mentions, these are more human-readable properties. And so we have this URL types. So inside of URL types, we're going to specify just one type of URL. So the identifier is just the identifier for my app. So this says that this is the app that should be opened with that URL. And the schemes is just going to be that first part. So any app starting with cs76.//, is going to be opened by our app. So if we run this, so we click on Open Safari. Got that nice little transition, and Safari opens with the URL we specified. So now, from any app, we can use that URL that we defined. So a URL starting with CS76, and we're going to get what would be, say, the URL of a web page, and display that as the text of our label. So from any app on the system, so in this case I'm just using Safari, I can type in CS76.//, and let's just say hello. Now, if I click go, we're actually going to flip back to our app, and now hello is displayed. So what's really cool is this could have been a link in a web page. So if you wanted to create a mobile website that will integrate with your app if the user has it installed, you can just open up URLs starting with that scheme you identified.
Mm-hmm. Can we send something back?
So can we send something back? So once the app is open, it's just open. We do know that it was opened via URL and not just some generic opening because of this handle open URL. But that's really all we have once the app has been opened. Other questions on integrating with other apps via the image picker or with these special URLs? So if not, then we will see you for the last lecture next week. This will be the last section, so there will be no section next week. And there are office hours tonight and tomorrow night. Tonight over in Northwest B108 right now, and tomorrow in Boylston.